I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Hey, great now to be back with Taylor Ann Bradford, Gloucester Times journalist. It's been a couple of weeks or more since we've talked with Taylor Ann, who's travels the world here, and she's got her jet parked. Where is it parked? Over at the O'Malley School where the helipad is?
Yeah, you know, it takes me to and from the island every day.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, welcome once again, Taylor Ann, and I can't believe the volume of quality information that you've been putting out in the last couple, we always do, but the last couple of weeks have just been kind of overwhelming. And there's so much to talk about. I would like to start just kind of with an overall impression or helicopter view, if you will, of the election, because, you know, most of the coverage has been on, you know, pulling papers, getting signatures, then getting into some forums. But all of a sudden, we've had some pretty important changes. And maybe you could just talk about it in general, wherever you want to go, because it's your story and your game.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, right, we know the primaries ended with, you know, the Greg Verga topping out over incumbent Safathu Romeo Taken, but that was really just polling to kind of see where the initial voters are thinking and what their anticipations are for general elections in November. And so that was kind of the vibe, if you will, for a couple of weeks. And then we jumped into debates, and that changed everything. You know, we had the councilor at large discussion over at Delanesville Community Center, where it's a very civil discussion between them. Same goes for the school committee candidates, where all of these people understand that they are going to be working with at least a couple people at that table down the pike, you know, come January 1st. And so those conversations were really civil. Now, the conversation between the incumbent Romeo Taken and Greg Verga last night at the mayoral debate hosted by the Greater Cape Ann Chamber was maybe a little bit more tense. You could definitely see that Romeo Taken was a lot more comfortable on the stage. She cited, you know, references to experiences that she's had, things that she's done while in office. You know, being the incumbent, you have a leg up, but it seemed very personable, and she was able to be very witty with her comments back at Greg, as he pointed out maybe different things that he disagreed with Safafia. But I also need to give credit to Greg, because he did point out a lot of good points about how they could draw out a plan and collaborate with the ward councilors to really make lists and plan out how they're going to revitalize downtown, how they're going to, you know, improve the sidewalks and really take a look. And his big thing was, you know, he needs to sit down with the people that he's going to be collaborating once he and if he is in office to really understand, you know, what it would look like to raise taxes, what it would look like to help the revitalize sidewalks downtown, and, you know, where will be need to be the places that we focus on first. So both had good points, but I think at the end of the night, you could tell that as both of them walked out of the stage that Safate definitely had kind of a jump to her step a little bit more. But again, we have so many more debates going down the line, so we'll just have to wait and kind of see what goes from there. But, you know, prior to last night's debate, you know, the hours leading up to it were, from my perspective, quite busy. We had two people that day withdraw from their races. First, we had the longtime school committee member, Melissa Joy Teixeira-Prince, who's been, you know, for the past 14 years, she's been on the school committee of Gloucester, and decided as of yesterday that she was going to drop out of the race. You know, prior to this, she had told me how she, you know, has unfinished business, you know, with the schools being built, needing to focus on the kids. She's been a dedicated individual on the school committee and really caring for the students and the teachers all throughout. But she said, you know, she wants to spend time with her family and friends. You know, she's pursuing more professional careers and wants to focus on her career and then also just her husband and granddaughter a lot more, as a lot of her nights these days are being taken up by school committee meetings. So she dropped out of the race, leaving, I believe that there is now going to be seven candidates seeking six open seats for the school committee, which makes it maybe a little bit more tense. Then we also had news that the only candidate for the Ward 3 race also dropped out. Adam Orlando made an announcement earlier this week to the city clerk that he's going to step back from politics as his responsibilities at work have changed and that he would not be able to serve Ward 3 to the capacity that he believes its residents deserve. Mm-hmm. Now, also noting that, you know, he's been super dedicated. As I've talked to so many different people over the past couple of days, they've all said that he's a great guy and they're sad to see him step out of the race. But, you know, as he leaves the scene, the question remains, it's who's going to take this seat? Because as we know, as I noted, it's uncontested. So as of right now, there's nobody running for the Ward 3, seat. Carlton McKay, who is running for at-large, had pulled out papers for Ward 3, but then decided to withdraw his application and focus at-large. I spoke to all three at-large candidates that are in Ward 3. That includes Jeff Worthley, Carlton McKay, and Peter Canavo, and all three told me that they are not looking to run a write-in campaign for Ward 3, but they did note that there are two members of the Ward 3 community that are seeking write-in campaigns. The first is Frank Mandorda. You know, he's been in the ward for a long time and cites that he's looking up for the challenge and the opportunity to serve the residents going forward. And what that might look like. And then we also have Bob Wynott. Bob Wynott is no stranger to city politics. He was a former Ward 3 counselor for 2 years, and then he was also an at-large counselor for 3 years, and then as well as 25 years on the Cable TV Commission and the former Gloucester city clerk. So he knows a lot and, you know, wants to get back into it. And Mandorda obviously said that he's focused on the future of the city and wants to do the best he can to support the residents of Ward 3. So there's a lot there of what's been going on in the city, you know, within a span of one day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, we've got more debates tonight. And so it just leaves the question of, you know, what's tomorrow going to bring as everything is shifting and changing. You know, I'm working on stories right now about even more changes down the pike. So it's going to be a really interesting election year. I mean, let's be honest. We have 3 weeks left. It's not a year, 365 days. It's 3 weeks left, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be interesting to see who pulls out ahead and what it looks like going forward.
Well, if I have my math correct, the election is 2 weeks. Actually, it's a week from Tuesday. It's coming Tuesday. So, yeah, it's a little under 2 weeks away. Great coverage. Take a breath. Here, have some water. No, I appreciate that. That's tremendous coverage and so much going on. And so much more we could talk about, but I know, you know, how busy you are. And I would like to, just question you or at least, remind, visitors of your article on kiosks because, the kiosk, I call it a kiosk fiasco. Kiosks were installed, I think it was in March, and they were inoperable until a week or so ago, and some of them are still inoperable. So give me a summary on that, Taylor Ann, because I know you also, you got some numbers there too that were kind of eye-popping.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, this is so crazy. As you said, most of the summer, people did not have to pay parking if they parked where a parking kiosk was located. Kiosks are different than, those meters that you see. Kiosks were the big black kind of, rectangles that had trash bags wrapped around them, citing that people shouldn't put money in them. And that reason was that the problem for the first kiosk was they did not allow the machines to accept cash. Now, so many people in the community don't have, you know, might not have card on them or might not have what the kiosk also was going to be allowing, which is this app called Flowbird. And so, you know, if you don't have card or the app, then you're kind of left without being able to go visit downtown. And this is not a city problem. It was cited to me by the city that, you know, this was a manufacturing problem. So luckily they didn't have to pay for anything to replace these kiosks. But it did cause a lot of problems, I think, within the city of confusion, but then also a loss of revenue to the city. So if we look, right, the new kiosks that are in, they're going to be great. They're compliant with American with Disabilities Act. We'll take payment, credit card use of an app and cash. Everyone's really excited about them, you know, at least from the city side. I don't think people are going to be super stoked to have to pay again down in downtown, but yeah. It's going to help bring revenue into the city. And the cost of the kiosks totaled, you know, 146,992, which was covered in part through a state grant. So it wasn't all through taxpayers' money that this had to be charged. But I spoke with Assistant to the CAO, Krista Carranza, the other day to kind of ask a little bit more again, you know, what are the numbers of some years versus this year? I know a lot of people have the question of, you know, is the city making money or did the city lose a ton of money this summer as, you know, influxes of people came as the pandemic kind of loosened its grip on our city. And so he noted that the city did not have to pay any additional money to swap out the kiosks, that the kiosk vendor was responsible for readjusting the originally ordered kiosks, which had wrong modules in them. The vendor absorbed that additional cost, which came to approximately $41,550 worth of labor related to switching out the kiosk. And what I saw, and I think you're noting this too in your comment, is that in any given year, the city usually makes a fair bit of money off of these kiosks. According to numbers that Sicuranza provided me, the revenue the city earned from only from kiosks during the summer of 2019 totaled to $75,633. The summer following in 2020, the pandemic really shifted everything, and the revenue amounted to only $32,195. That's a drastic turn from just two summers. And the estimated total revenue for July 1st through October 7th of this year was $59,795. So while a lot of people thought that, you know, the lack of kiosks was a total bust and made the city no money, we actually made more money even without the kiosks than we did in 2020, which is crazy. I think that alone just shows, you know, how the city makes money, loses money. He also noted that the actual revenues from parking meters, kiosks, and monthly parking pass fees, you know, in the fiscal 2020 year was $359,990. So that kind of gives you a perspective of the slices of pie within the total sum that the city makes in all the parking revenue expenditures or revenues that they make through parkers' expenditures.
Well, you need to put, yeah, and again, great stuff, Taylor, and great work. You need to put an asterisk about 2020, though, because, you know, that was a pandemic.
And exactly,
I remember walking many times in Main Street, and everywhere was completely empty like a ghost town. So, you know, those numbers are certainly skewed, but terrific job. Okay, finally, a good story and a good friend, and I think a friend of the city is the owners of the Gloucester House, Lenny and Dottie Linquata, and Mike Linquata, the dad, and Dave, and all the whole family. You got a good story going on there, a lot going on at the Gloucester House, so tell us about that.
Yeah, so I did not know the Gloucester House could get any sweeter. You know, that family and that community down there is just has been for years the best. And when Lenny Linquata said that they were going to be doing renovations inside, but not publicizing the details of what they were doing, you know, it left a curious taste in our mouths to kind of see what was going to be going on there. And then the news broke that Cake and Bakery moved from Eastern Avenue over to Seven Seas Wharf.
Okay, I see what you did there. Couldn't be sweeter. Left a taste in your mouth than Cake and. I get it. Good job.
Thank you. But I'm excited. You know, Cake and is a bakery that does cakes for all occasions, does muffins, does a lot of different things. And Lenny had approached them saying, you know, this is kind of the vision he had. And to make matters even better, you know, Cake Can's not the only thing moving over to the Gloucester House. Well, the Gloucester House, as the restaurant we all knew it, is not the same. It'll include Cake Can. It will include a extended bar area that will provide some food as well. And then there's also going to be, and Lenny Linquata is pretty excited about this, about a marketplace to join Cake Can in the former Function Hall space. This market, which is, you know, 3 to 4 weeks away from opening, will include vendors from uptown who will be offering clothing, Wicked Tuna merchandise, and eventually prepared dinners from the Gloucester House's bar. And so, you know, Linquata noted that he's striving to make a destination. That people can go to Seven Seas Sales, the Schooner Lannan, you know, Gloucester Boat Rentals, Wicked Tuna, Blue Collar Lobster, Cake Ann, Gloucester's House Bar and the Marketplace, all in one location at Seven Seas Wharf, and really kind of revitalizing that part of downtown and making that kind of an exciting thing to go visit, you know, as if it wasn't already. So I'm excited for them as they continue to work out the plans. And, you know, Cake Ann is there right now, so definitely know when we get off this call, don't hesitate to go down there and get yourself a cupcake.
All right, all right. Very good. Taylor Ann Bradford, Gloucester Times reporter with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire. By the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.